20. The Tower of London. Modo was crossing London Bridge, dressed in a dark blue, red-trimmed, sergeant-at-arms beef-eater uniform, the royal insignia emblazoned across his chest. The beef-eater's cloak was thick, and the uniform smelled of sweat and mothballs. He dabbed at his forehead with his handkerchief. He had studied the portrait of Jonathan York, and been able to recreate his appearance to Mr. Socrates' satisfaction, but because of the burns, bits of flesh and skin protruded along his forearms. Tharpa had covered them with another poultice and bandages. Then Modo had hidden it all under the long sleeves of his jacket. "If anyone asks, tell them you fell at the pub," Mr. Socrates had said. Another difficulty had been the business of growing whiskers. It was the only part of his shape-shifting, limited by his age. Until he was older, he wouldn't be able to do it, so Tharpa had attached two mutton-chop whiskers to his jowls. They scratched his face, and sweat made them stink like dead rats. Modo wondered just what kind of hair the things were made of. Modo glanced over the railing at the Thames. The lights of a few boats floated eerily in the water. He'd been on this bridge before, staring down at the children and women, mudlarks, who sifted through the mud at low tide for coal, bits of rope, anything to sell for a penny or two. It was a hard, terrible way to make a living. Even though it was nearly 8:30 in the evening, the bridge was crowded with costermongers, clutching their baskets of fruits and vegetables, clerks on their way home, and couples dressed to the nines. Top hats bobbed in the crowd. Modo cut through them all. Most stepped aside, respecting the authority of his uniform. Once off the bridge, he walked down the street to his destination. The Tower of London was really a collection of towers surrounded by a wall so thick and tall, even Modo didn't think he could scale it. The drawbridge to the Tower of London was down, and he entered through the middle tower. "Back straight," he told himself. "You're a sergeant-at-arms. Carry yourself appropriately." He marched under the portcullis and into the courtyard without a challenge from either guard. He nodded to both of them, but didn't speak, as he had no idea what York's voice was like, nor how York would act. Modo turned toward the bell tower. He'd memorized a map, but with only a few ornamental lights here and there, it was hard to tell where one building ended and another began. The cobblestones glistened. A soft rain had fallen earlier. From somewhere nearby, ravens cawed. Modo looked up and spotted the white belfry. The only way to enter the bell tower was through the building next door, the lieutenant's lodgings. It looked a little like a large fairy-tale cabin transported from the mountains. Light shone from one of the second-floor windows, and from most of the windows on the ground floor. Two beef-eaters stood side by side at the main entrance, leaning on their halberds. They straightened up as he approached, so Modo assumed he must outrank them. He intended to barge right between them when one said, "Password, sir." "Password?" Mr. Socrates had said nothing of passwords. Several possible answers flitted through his mind. "Rex? Portcullis? Long live the Queen?" "You look a little pale, sir," said the other guard. Modo made as if to speak, then coughed heavily. In the hoarsest voice possible, which wasn't difficult since his lungs were still raw, he said, "I'm under the weather." He spat a gob of mucus at their feet. "Rotten luck, sir. But you know the lieutenant's orders. No one can pass without first saying the password. My mind is addled at the moment." "I'll give you an easy one. Where was Anne Boleyn beheaded?" Modo tried to control his breathing. "Slow, steady," he told himself. She had been King Henry VIII's second wife, until he'd had her executed. Where did she die? Think, Modo. At Traitor's Gate? No. Beheadings were sometimes held at Tower Hill, outside the Tower of London. But was that where Anne Boleyn met her end? If only he'd read his history more carefully. One of the guards was leering suspiciously. He was a hulking brute, head big as a bucket. His nose had been broken at least once. Moments earlier, the fellow's eyes had regarded him respectfully. Was he taking a second look at the sideburns?
"You'd better give me an answer, sir," the guard said.
Modo hacked again, produced another phlegmy black wad and spat it past the nearest guard's nose, hitting the wall. The guard stepped back.
"Where was Anne Boleyn beheaded?"
Modo repeated, trying to make it sound like a joke. "It was worth a try. Right below her chin."
"That's right,"
the men laughed.
"You were playing with us, weren't you, sir? A cat and two field mice."
Modo nodded. They stepped apart and he entered, turning back, still smiling.
"Just one question," he asked. "Where is Featherstone imprisoned?"
"You're the one who took him to his cell, sir," said one.
Modo cringed a little.
"Yes, of course. I wanted to be sure he hasn't been moved."
"He's still in the west cell block, sir. Only place he could be, really."
"Don't be flippant," Modo snapped, as harshly as he could. Their smiles vanished.
"Yes, Sergeant. Sorry, Sergeant."
He marched into the lodging, turning in what he hoped was the right direction. He was heading west, at least. He slammed through a white door and came upon a hallway. On two occasions he hit dead ends and had to backtrack. He passed a servant but pretended she didn't exist, assuming York would have done the same. He found a heavy door, opened it. Judging by the stone walls, he was inside the bell tower itself. Maybe Anne Boleyn's ghost still lingered here. He followed another hallway until he came to a thick iron door. With great effort, he pushed it open. Inside, a man sat behind a small oak table. Modo recognized him by his uniform, the chief warder, a doe-fleshed man with a bulbous jaw set in a collar of fat.
"You're tardy, York," the man grumbled.
"I'm sorry, sir. I'll be late for my dinner. I don't like cold eel."
"I won't be late again, sir, I promise."
The chief warder stood and handed the keys to Modo.
"The prisoners are in your charge. Mayhew will be here at 4 bells.
After the men left, Modo waited several seconds, then lowered a wooden bar across the door. At the table, he flipped through the large record book. It was filled with details about the prisoners' meals and visitors, but nothing that explained where Featherstone was held. The only thing Modo could do was to look for him. He picked up the keys and unlocked the door into the cells, discovering a short, torchlit tunnel and 6 doors, each with a slot for passing through food. He listened. At first he heard a mewing sound, something like the barn cat that Mrs. Finchley would allow into the house for him to pet. Modo crept from door to door, listening at each, until he heard someone sobbing.
"Oscar Featherstone?"
Modo said. The weeping stopped. Chains rattled.
Yes?
Modo tried several keys until the lock clicked. He pushed the door open. By the flickering light of the tunnel's torches, he saw a man sitting on a bed of old straw and leaning against the stone wall. Modo took a few steps into the fetid chamber. The young man's eyes were glinting with tears and he was shaking. His fancy clothes were muddy and his head bandaged.
"Mr. Featherstone, I have a message from—"
Who would send him a message?
The Queen.
"Your mother."
"You've seen Mum?"
"No, I received a missive from her. She's convinced you are innocent."
"But I did do it. That's the thing. I killed my own father."
Modo wondered about the fellow's state of mind. He'd be hanged all the sooner if he kept shouting out his guilt.
"But was it your fault?"
"That's another question. Were you coerced? Had you been drinking spirits? Your mother has paid me to get information to give your lawyers."
I was under some kind of influence."
Modo edged a little closer.
"What do you mean?"
"I was drugged."
"Was it Fur who drugged you?"
"You know Mr. Fur?"
"The lawyers mentioned him,"
Modo lied.
I think you're right. I don't know. I have vague images, memories. I'm a member of the Young Londoners Exploratory Society. I joined because I have a great interest in scientific theories. We had meetings every week. I remember drinking a liquid from a flask. It burned my throat. It was given to me by a doctor."
"A doctor?
What was his name?"
"Name?
Corn. Cornelius. That was it. Cornelius.
Oscar laughed. Modo wondered if he was going mad.
And his last name? Hyde,
Oscar said.
And what was in the flask? A tincture. It wasn't the first time I'd had it, but it was the first time I did something terrible afterward.
He pressed his hands to his temples, and the chains rubbed against his face.
Can you explain what it did to you? I was two people. Myself and someone else. And that other person inside me was very angry. I could feel him boiling with it. A woman spoke to me at a meeting last night, but I didn't say anything back. It doesn't make sense.
He struck himself such a blow on the head that Modo shuddered.
No sense. No sense. Nonsense.
Modo put his hand on Oscar's shoulder and spoke softly.
I know this is a hard time. I feel so sorry for you, but please calm yourself. Much of what you are saying does make sense. It does. Yes, it makes perfect sense,
Modo offered quickly, though he wasn't certain he was telling the truth.
Please give me any details you can remember. What did this woman say to you? I don't know. Not exactly. She asked me questions, I think, and read something from a sheet of paper.
What was it about?
I cannot remember. Obviously I followed her instructions, though. That's the only explanation I have for my attack on my father.
What did she look like?
She had red hair.
Hackendottir. She told them what to do, and they had to follow her commands. So she was at the bottom of it.
What happened next? I'm not sure. I went home, went to sleep, and when I woke up I no longer controlled my body. I went to Parliament. That other side of me was so angry. I spoke to my father, but they weren't my words. I murdered him.
You mustn't blame yourself.
I must. I didn't do the act, and yet I did do it.
He rattled his chains.
I saw him, broken under me. I had control of my mind again, my body. The voices of the Clockwork Guild left me soon after. All I could do was weep.
You see, it's not your fault. You would never have done this had you been in your right mind.
Do you think that's true?
Yes, yes, of course.
But I need you to answer a question. You mentioned the Clockwork Guild. What is it? I have phrases burned into my mind. The symbols must fall. The Clockwork Guild sees all. They constantly repeat in the back of my mind.
Mr. Featherstone, it's likely there is a scientific reason for your actions. It has to do with how these people have taken over your interior life. We'll do our best to help you prove your innocence.
Please tell my mother. Tell her it wasn't me. It was that tincture.
Modo pitied him. Featherstone had innocently imagined that through the Young Londoners' Exploratory Society, he'd be studying science and conducting experiments. Instead, he himself had become the experiment, a murderous experiment at that.
You must think carefully. Where did these events occur? We were led to a chamber. At least, I think we were.
All of you?
I don't know.
If we can discover the place where you were experimented on, we can find your father's true murderers. Featherstone put his hands to his head and closed his eyes.
We went down. It was like descending into Hades.
Where?
It was an abominable place. That's all I remember.
Modo could see he wouldn't get the answer he needed just now.
Then tell me, please, who were your companions? You must understand they are in danger, too.
Oscar's shaking and shivering worsened.
There was Roderick Yarrow, Charles Boone, Richard Corney, Michael Icarus, and
that's only four. I need to know all eight.
Yes, yes, eight of us. That leaves three. Nixon Hales, Henry Glynn, and, of course, Albert of Saxe-Coburg. My dear friend.
Modo ran the names through his mind again to be certain he would remember them. Did this red-haired woman give them orders also?
I don't know.
What about Prince Albert? Do you know where he is?
At the palace, of course.
I'm sorry to tell you he's not.
Is he lost?
No, no, Modo said quickly, seeing that Oscar was about to burst into tears. He's safe. Oscar slumped forward, his head between his knees, and sobbed.
I'll be hanged, won't I?
No, I'll do everything in my power to prove your innocence. I promise. You are not responsible for the murder of your father. Remember that, Mr. Featherstone. A thud against the main door echoed in the cell.
Open up at once,
someone shouted from outside. I must go. Modo closed the cell door and ran to the jailer's room. No windows, no escape.
Open up!
The gruff shout was followed by another blow to the door.
I will! I will!
Modo yelled. With no place to hide, he'd have to talk his way out. He pushed up the giant latch, and the door swung open, slamming against the wall. A beefeater entered, aiming a pistol at Modo. He looked familiar.
York!
The moment York saw his own face staring back at him, he lowered the gun.
My lord!
The two beefeaters behind him, their halberds at the ready, were equally gobsmacked.
Who is this impostor?
Modo demanded. No one moved. York's eyelids drooped. Whatever Mr. Socrates' agents had given him had not yet worn off.
You are the impostor!
York raised his pistol, but Modo smacked it away.
See? He's the faker!
He pulled on York's mutton chops, yanking him down to the floor. Modo rammed into the beefeaters, bowling them over, and scrambled down the hall. He heard a shot as he turned a corner. The bullet bounced off the stone wall behind him with a loud ping. He couldn't remember the way out. He came to stone stairs, and, having no other way to go, charged up them, shouts and footsteps close behind him. He leapt through a window, using his left arm to block his face from the glass as his right hand grabbed a ledge. He jerked to a stop and, for a moment, hung over the ledge. His arm was weak and his hand was growing slippery with blood, having been cut on the broken window. Modo swung his legs onto the ledge, straightened, and forced himself to clamber several feet up the jutting stones on the wall to the top of the bell tower. He crouched in the shadow of the belfry to gather his thoughts. For some moments the courtyard below was quiet. Then, right next to him, the bells rang out, their terrific clang, 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 nearly knocking him over the wall. A clamour rose in the courtyard. He peered down to see men running this way and that, yelling to one another. Then he heard the portcullis at the front gate clank shut. Eventually they would search the rooftops. Better to run now, especially while he had the advantage of the dark. He dashed across the tower and jumped down onto the lieutenant's lodgings, bounding along its pitched roof. He jumped to Bloody Tower, just catching the very edge of the top of one wall. By now all the gates would be closed. He tried to dream up a way to scale the walls that surrounded the tower. Impossible, he realized. Then Modo remembered Anne Boleyn and was inspired anew. He found a window on the tower and climbed down to it, forcing it open and slipping into the room, tangling en route with a tall candelabrum. He passed through the door, followed a narrow hallway, and stumbled down a spiral staircase, hiding his bloody hand as he twice passed guards. With luck and a couple of good guesses, he came across the stone steps that Anne Boleyn herself would have walked, the steps to Traitor's Gate, the only water entrance to the tower. Two beefeaters stood next to a boat, guarding an open gate. Modo ran down the steps, shouting, "He's just inside the tower! That way! I'll close the gate!" They ran up the steps past him. When they were out of sight, he plopped himself in the boat, grabbed an oar, and pushed his way out past the gate, smiling broadly over how easy it had been. But then he looked down at the water, suddenly afraid. He couldn't swim. He paddled hard to the edge of the moat, jumped from the boat, and climbed up the bank to the street. Minutes later, Modo was charging down St. Catherine's Way and onto Irongate Wharf. He hid behind a large crate and tore off the vest, cloak, and uniform. Underneath, He wore his thin street clothes, not quite warm enough for the cold night. He shivered uncontrollably. His hand was now covered with blood. At least he wasn't so obviously a beef-eater. He reversed the cloak so that none of the insignia showed, and threw it around his shoulders. Finally, he ripped the mutton chops from his face and dropped them, along with the vest and uniform, into the Thames. Voices cut through the fog, and loud footsteps echoed on the wharf, so Modo stayed perfectly still, except for his chattering teeth. He waited for 15 minutes, and when there was no indication he was in danger of being pursued, he crossed the street, shimmied up a column on one of the warehouses, and climbed, hand over hand, up a 6-story brick building, grateful that the cast-iron window frames were so strong. On the roof he began to run, relieved to be out of sight. He would work his way west and cross the Thames at Blackfriars Bridge. The tower bells of London rang softly in the distance.